From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Keep what you got until you get what you need, y'all. You got to give a lot just to get what you need sometimes, y'all.
Sometimes music is more than a beat, more than a through line. Sometimes music is the voice of a people. For a wide swath of Washington, D.C. in the 1970s and 80s and beyond, that voice is Go-Go, a homemade brew of blues, funk, conga drums, call and response music with a story. This hour on Point, the story of Go-Go. You can join the conversation. What's the story you hear? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now, Washingtonian and former Washington Post reporter and editor, Natalie Hopkinson, contributing editor for The Root. Her new book is Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. She joins us from Oak Bluffs in Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. Natalie Hopkinson, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Hey, that's some music. It makes us move, and you've got a whole musical story here. But it's really interesting that it's the story of a city, not exactly a country, though the country's involved here too, but there's a story of a population, not just a music. What's the relationship between Go-Go and the city you're looking at? It was called the Chocolate City right there in your title, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, Go-Go really is the cultural manifestation of the Chocolate City. So, you know, a lot of this is sort of political because, you know, you're talking about a time when D.C. was at its height 70% black, and so this is sort of like the cultural manifestation of that reality for a long time.
Here's a voice from the trailer for your new book, Go-Go Live. Everybody's got a trailer now. This is D.C. hip-hop artist Asheru talking about go-go music, the people who made it, alive and behind the scenes in Washington, D.C.
You've never seen us on TV. The bus didn't stop in our neighborhood during your 7th grade field trip. Maybe you didn't learn about us in history class. Those pictures of D.C. never look past all that white marble. You might miss those of us who have always been here. Those of us who laid the bricks, nursed the babies, drive the trucks, teach the children. The ones who make the music, go-go music.
Go-go music. We'll talk about that city Asheru's pointing to right there, the one behind the monuments in Washington. But the music itself, Natalie, where'd it come from? What's the blend that made this Washington home-brewed product, indigenous? What made it distinctive? Where'd it come from?
Well, it came from Chuck Brown, who passed away earlier this year. Mm-hmm. He's considered the godfather of go-go, and he was actually playing with a band called Los Latinos in Washington, and this was a salsa band. They played sort of top 40 music with a salsa kick to it, and so he blended some of his own percussion and other blues elements that he was familiar with and slowed down the beat, added in congas and cowbells, and that's when you got go-go music. And it's sort of a meme that caught on around 1976 and has never let go of the city since then.
So there comes the music, and what it meets is this idea, more than an idea in those days, the fact of the Chocolate City. Here's a song by Parliament. This is 1975, and you will hear in the lyrics here, they're saying CC, CC, as in Chocolate City. Here's the idea, the fact in America in the mid-70s.
All up around your neck. Hey, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. God bless CC and his vanilla suburbs.
Hey.
God bless CC and its vanilla suburbs. George Clinton there with Parliament in 1975. Just free go-go, but he's identified the fact that go-go was built on, what was that? Vanilla suburbs, chocolate city? What was going on, Natalie?
Well, what was happening was, you know, this was right after the civil rights movement, you know, that sort of culminated in the death of Martin Luther King when he was assassinated in 1968. And so what you had was the vanilla suburbs weren't so vanilla. They were sort of starting to become more flavorful, and some of the chocolate was moving in there. But what was happening in the center city was that they became even darker. And so he, you know, but the fact that this was happening in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, made it a huge prize. And so that song by Parliament was actually, you know, a national hit. It became a national point of pride that the very first elected mayor of Washington, D.C. in 1974 was Walter Washington.
And people very aware, looking out across the country, Baltimore, Cleveland, Newark, Atlanta, Gary, George Clinton there, speculating maybe soon beyond L.A. And more, chocolate cities. Troubled cities then, and got more troubled sometimes as a new wave of drugs came on. But at the same time, you write with a kind of deep appreciation of the way in which this chocolate city, Washington, D.C., worked to build its own identity, its own music in this moment, Natalie.
Yeah, I mean, so he's also talking about, you know, as you point out, it's sort of a, many major cities became chocolate cities in around that time, and it actually was a bit of a hollow prize because the tax base and the resources and many of the things that structurally you need to be able to govern were not in place in the cities, and so they really struggled during the chocolate era. But what I sort of look at in my book is sort of the roses that grew in the concrete, and go-go music is one of those things that through adversity and through the heat of that moment and coming out of these very turbulent times in cities, they were able to create an art form, that one that is entirely black-owned, just about entirely black-owned. It's created by the black community for the black community, and it's really a really amazing accomplishment.
Here's a little bit of an example of that. The godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown, and the Soul Searchers with an example. They took standard jazz tunes sometimes mixed with jazz and conga drums to create something quite unique. This is a 1986 live version of the Duke Ellington classic from Chuck Brown here, It Don't Mean a Thing, Revisited. Chuck Brown with Duke Ellington's It Don't Mean a Thing, go-go style. That happened to be 1986. It's live. The live quality, you write and remind us, Natalie, very important. You're live, and the call and response you can hear a little of right in that clip.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the integral elements of go-go. In go-go, the audience is actually part of the band. So that's why Chuck Brown was an incredibly revered figure in D.C. because I think that most of the population of the Chocolate City has gotten a Chuck Brown shout-out at one point live on stage, and it's almost like a blessing, you know, when you're able to get that. But that's how they're able to kind of knit the community because the audience is integrated into the performance, and you don't have a go-go show if you don't have a band, if you don't have the audience performing, you know, call and response, not just with the shout-outs, but also the dances, and, you know, they're very high-energy shows.
It was tough times in many ways, but there's such a note of celebration in the music and in your embrace of it, Natalie. What's the heart of what excited people so about this, even if, as you say, the cities that were now chocolate were often kind of left high and dry?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think that it's you know, I sort of opened the book where I quote a woman who I asked her, you know, she was at a funeral for one of the main big go-go figures, and I asked her if she was a go-go fan. And she looked at me like I was crazy. She was like, what do you mean, am I a fan? You know, like, she's like, that's not even a word to describe it. She is part of it. She watched it develop. She said it's part of her blood. It's like the food. And she likened it to New Orleans, jazz in New Orleans. And that's what it sort of, that's the place that it has for the Chocolate City. And it's similarly, in New Orleans, jazz is also seen as a way, you know, with the jazz funerals, you know, you are talking about, you know, a sadness of somebody being gone, but it is an opportunity to celebrate life. And so that's, there are many parallels between go-go in D.C. and jazz in New Orleans.
To celebrate life, to talk about life, in many ways to define life. Natalie Hopkinson's new book is Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. We'll look at both that life and that death she refers to right there. You can join the conversation this hour. Was that you in the go-go groove back in Washington, back in the day? Are you still there with go-go? What do you hear in these tracks, this time, this culture? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALKERS. Run Joe, Chuck Brown, and the Soul Searchers. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. That's One-on-One live behind us. Rare Essence playing. That's 1986 recording live at Breeze's Metro Club in Washington, D.C. Rare Essence, one of Go-Go's biggest players at its height in 1986. We're talking today about the heyday of Go-Go music in Washington, D.C., the soundtrack of a tough time and what was celebrated as the Chocolate City, the black side of the nation's capital, the city itself at that time, and its go-go music. Looking at it then and now with Natalie Hopkinson. She is author of the new book, Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. You can join us this hour. Was that you in the go-go groove? And what do you hear in these tracks, this time, this culture? African-American listeners, what do you say? What does go-go say? Does it speak to you? Does it speak for you? And what about the whole Chocolate City idea, celebration? Are you on board? Is that history now? What's been won? What's been lost? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I mean, Natalie, you remind us there's a whole great cultural history and a lot of scholarship around it, looking at the public sphere in the black community. You quote a group, this back in the 90s, saying it really doesn't rely on magazines and coffee shops and highbrow tracks and salons. Its energy comes from vernacular practices of street talk, new music, radio shows, church voices, entrepreneurship, circulation, but above all, music. What was the word in this music? What was the message, Natalie?
Well, the message, I mean, at its heart, go-go music is party music. And so it's really, the message on the surface is just a celebration. But in a time when, you know, many voices and many communities were muted or even invisible, just calling out the names of certain communities, calling out the names of certain individuals, certain crews, certain, you know, the bartender that's there during the live performance. I mean, that you're making things visible that otherwise would be invisible in this country.
Making things visible that would otherwise be invisible. Was it a kind of claiming territory? This is ours. This is our city now. Our subculture. Our city's culture.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, you know, as I said, because of the way the population went, many people abandoned the city. And so, you know, for some people who stayed, it's and I think even to today, people who stay, it is very political, and it's, you know, the people who sort of hang on and, you know, while everybody's leaving, while the resources are leaving the city, it's ours, we've claimed it, and we're going to celebrate.
Here's rapper educator Asheru right on Go-Go.
This is the Chocolate City, and this is Go-Go music. This is how we do. The heart of the city never dies. The beat goes on. This is our story.
This is our story. This is how we do. We've got lots of feedback here on Facebook, Natalie. Mark says, any Chuck Brown is my favorite for sure. Connie says, Show Ya Right was an anthem of my junior high school years. Joy is calling right now. Hi, Joy. You're on the air with Natalie Hopkinson. Thanks for calling. Joy, what's your experience?
Hi, Tom. I just want to say thank you for all the diversity you have on Point. I grew up in D.C., was born in 79, and I just left the area 5 years ago in Boston, Mass., and I, too, would not consider myself a fan. It is a part of who you are, where most people have high school proms and dances. We had high school go-go's and the different bands that came out of that area, Junkyard and Backyard. You knew these people. They were your neighbors. And just the nostalgia I feel just hearing the songs like Run, Joe, and songs like Sardines and Pork and Beans. I was singing them in kindergarten. You know, I didn't even realize that this was, you know, a different genre than other people heard in different parts of the country. I felt like this was music. I really appreciate this topic this morning and just wanted to relate to what your guest was saying about the other person at the funeral. This is Gargo, this is who you are if you grew up in D.C.
Hey, Joy, stick with us. We want to tickle your nostalgia a little bit more here. Little Benny, it was Little Benny's funeral that Natalie talked about at the opening of her book, at top of the hour here. Here's Cat in the Hat live, Little Benny and the Masters, 1987.
Listen, Cat in the Hat.
Little Benny, 1987, Cat in the Hat. Now, Joy, I mean, you can hear it right here. This is about hard drugs in the inner city. It wasn't all gorgeous. Cat in the Hat used to do smack. Now he does crack. Things got tough. What about that in the music, Joy? What did that say to you?
Well, in a time of the city where violence was really, really prevalent, and, you know, as a young person, you were losing a lot of your friends to the drugs in the community. I guess this music helped to bring some ray of light to the situation for a lot of us. Like you said, the call and response was almost therapeutic, you know. Even the mayor himself was caught up in it. So it was a very bleak time, but this music really provided some sort of light for the community about what was going on in spite of all the horrific tales you would hear day after day after day.
Joy, I really appreciate your call. Thanks so much for being with us. Natalie, remind us of that story. Adrian Fenty, mayor of Washington, D.C., and as Joy, our caller, who was there, says, even the mayor got kind of caught up in go-go times.
Yeah, it was really sort of, I mean, for many Washingtonians, you know, the fact that the mayor was caught up when it was really just spoke to how bad it was. And, you know, at the funeral for Lil Benny, he passed away unexpectedly in 2010. He was only 46 years old.
The morning after he played with Chuck Brown.
The morning after he played with his mentor, Chuck Brown. And his death actually happened to come at a time when the population of the city was literally tipping over, tipping back over away from the chocolate side.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just dipping below 50%. Politically, it was there's a fierce battle over public policy in the city, whether we do dog parks or we do kids parks, whether we build, whether we build stadiums or we build schools.
I mean, and this was kind of a black and white tension, and Adrian Fenty sort of representing that, right?
Absolutely was. And ironically, Adrian Fenty is somebody who comes directly right in the middle. He's somebody who grew up on Go-Go, is very familiar.
Mixed black-white parentage, knew both sides, brought a lot of white administrators into his administration.
Knew both sides. Mm-hmm. But in the way that he governed the city, and the way that, in particular, his education chief, Michelle Rhee, was a lightning rod.
Around the schools and pushing out a lot of veterans, teachers there. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought he was betraying Black Washington.
Yeah, there was a really strong feeling that way because, if there's, in a city that's D.C., it's very diverse socioeconomically. You have some of the highest percentage of highly educated Black people in the world, and to not have that representation in his government, and also the policies were disproportionately affected, especially education policy. The schools are still more, and even today are still more than 70% Black. So the policies are disproportionately affecting the Black community. And so when little Benny passed away, it was kind of strange timing because he was sinking in the polls. He was really having a lot of trouble. And so he sort of had this go-go strategy where he brought in go-go artists. He arranged to pay for this funeral, the city to pay for this funeral for little Benny, which 6,000 people came in the middle of a work day. I had never seen a funeral that big before. So it was basically like a state funeral, quasi-state funeral.
Yeah, for a go-go musician.
With great, go-go amazing. Musicians, we had live performances. It was amazing.
But the mayor got in trouble right there.
He was booed right in the middle of the funeral. And that was a very clear indication that he was about to get the boot by voters, and who, although their majority citywide was declining, they still were an overwhelming majority of Democratic primary voters. So the Black vote is very important. This is,
sure.
This is the same nationally as well as locally. The Black vote is very important, and what Fenty had done, which many of us still look back on, he really united the working and middle and upper middle class Black communities in the city in a way that we haven't seen in a really long time. There wasn't a meeting, there wasn't on a listserv. Everybody sort of agreed that it was time for him to go, and that's exactly what happened at the election a couple months later.
Let the music roll, and it happened. We'll talk more about the politics in and behind Go-Go. Here's Good to Go from the film of 1986. This is Trouble Funk.
We are young, we are tough. The underground sound is rising up. Changing the roof, setting the pace. Go-Go's here to stay.
A message from the intercessor. We pay our dues, so you make our own rules. Dreamers, believers, we want everyone to know. Hey, what you say, what you say, what you say.
Good to Go, Trouble Funk, 1986. Natalie Hopkinson is with us, author of Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. Jimmy in Utahville, South Carolina. Jimmy, thanks for calling. You're on the air, my friend.
Yes. Well, I moved to Washington, D.C. in 1986.
All right.
And I couldn't understand the fever. Everybody talking about Chuck Brown, the disco swing. And until I went out, Chuck Brown used to give boat rides. And on these boat rides, he used to play disco and the dance things on the boat ride. And that's all everybody could talk about. Now, Washington, D.C. was unique. I admit that Washington had its inner city problems,
Yes, it did.
And all of that. But as far as the culture, as far as Chuck Brown concerned, the whole city, Washington, D.C. was in love with Chuck Brown. You couldn't say anything bad about Chuck Brown. You might have got boxed in the mouth.
Right. And you were there, and you heard it, Jimmy. I appreciate your call. Thanks very much for that. Natalie, stand by with us right now from Washington, D.C. Nico, the go-go-ologist, Nico Hobson is with us, go-go historian, archivist, co-owner of GoGoRadio.com. It's an online radio station based in Washington. Nico Hobson, thank you very much for being with us today.
I'm fine. How you doing, Tom?
We're good. We are young. We are tough. Trouble Funk sang there in Good to Go. What did go-go mean to Washington in those years?
Go-go meant in those days, and I still tend to believe, mm-hmm. obviously, it was the heartbeat of the city, basically. And when I say that, I truly mean it. For the actual the music itself, I think it kind of coincided with the if your heart mm-hmm. being the foundation of everything that happens within your body, you know, and the music itself, go-go, is the actual culture or basically the main part of our culture here in D.C. So back then when Trouble was super hot and when that movie Good to Go came out, mm-hmm. that kind of stamped that. You know, the movie was some garbage, but, you know, it was big enough, the music was big enough at that time to where, like, it deserved that type of response.
Natalie Hopkinson is looking at what a lot of people then called the Chocolate City. She reminds us that black African-American majority went away. Whites started coming back into Washington in greater numbers, and it went away. How did that affect go-go, Nico Hobson?
I don't necessarily, well, maybe so, but I'm a little bit different from a lot of people here. I don't necessarily believe that whites changed how go-go was perceived in go-go. In D.C. I really believe that's our own fault. You know, and when I say our, I mean us that work and live, and this is our livelihood, basically, and our lives. So I believe it was our own fault. We haven't handled our own business correctly to where it's not represented properly to the masses.
Go-go ran up against changing demographics. It ran up against other musical forms. I mean, here's DJ Kool. This is 1996. Kind of a crossover hit performed live in Bahamas Bay, Philadelphia. This is 10 years after Trouble Funk's Good to Go, but a very different sound. You can hear the hip-hop business in Let Me Clear My Throat.
Witness, and some of y'all won't, but listen, let me clear my throat. Oh, have mercy, babe. Ha! I hope you don't mind. Let me clear my throat. Special dedication going out to everybody here in Bahama Bay, in Philadelphia. Here we go now, check it out. Rock to the rhythm of the funky vibe, so I can get busy just one more time to the beat, and you don't quit. It's that old school rap with that new school hit.
Natalie, what's hip-hop and what's go-go?
Well, they actually were born around the same time in the mid-70s, and it's just very interesting parallels because, you know, hip-hop came about in the Bronx, post-industrial, post-civil rights Bronx, and go-go emerged in post-industrial, post-civil rights Washington, D.C., but their trajectories were much different. Hip-hop became, and it really right around 1986 when the Good to Go film in the mid-80s, hip-hop really began its global march, and go-go really did it, and it's really sort of stayed in the pocket right in Washington, D.C.
Nico, why do you think it stayed in the pocket in Washington? Why didn't go-go become a truly, fully national sound?
Because we didn't want it. I mean, to put it bluntly, we didn't want it. I mean, it's D.C. The pocket is D.C. And it can be meant in a lot of different ways, but the people are part of the pocket and vice versa. So it's always, and if you really talk to true Washingtonians, they kind of like it that way, to be honest with you. I mean, they kind of like it being self-contained, and even though a lot of us, yeah, we want to go national, we're going national, mm-hmm. but, you know, when a lot of times when those opportunities come to them, man, they want to stay right home and get the love they deserve right here. The love that they always get right here.
The love that is there for them right there. The sound of a hot pocket of America. Nico Hobson, a big figure in that world. Co-owner of GoGoRadio.com with us today from Washington, D.C. Nico Hobson, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
Natalie Hopkinson, author of Go-Go Live. Please stand by there. We're talking about the history of go-go music in Washington, the sound of the Chocolate City behind us here right now, Diamond. in the back by Subtle Thoughts. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the heyday of go-go music in Washington, D.C., the soundtrack of a tough time and what was celebrated as the Chocolate City, the black side of the nation's capital, and its go-go music then and now. Behind us right here, Pretty Girls by Wale, Gucci Mane, and Weezy. So the so-called new go-go off the 2010 album Attention Deficit. Natalie Hopkinson is with us today. She's Washingtonian, longtime reporter, editor for the Washington Post, now contributing editor for The Root, out with a new book called Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. Joins us from Oak Bluffs on Martha's Vineyard today. You can join us as well. What about the whole Chocolate City celebration? Are you on board? Is that history now? What's been won? What's been lost? What's the legacy of go-go? Does it still make you move? Does it still speak? And first-time go-go listeners, what do you hear? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Buffalo, New York, and Chris. Chris, thanks for calling. It's great to have you with us. You are on the air. Can I get Chris there? Hello, Chris. Maybe we'll
yes,
get.
I am.
Hi, Chris, you're on. What do you know?
Well, I've enjoyed Chuck Brown for a number of years, and now listening to his sound whenever I hear it, I really enjoy it. I'm not in good health, and some days I feel really, really bad.
Sorry.
When I hear a Chuck Brown tune, I have to get up and move, no matter, and it just makes me feel better just to get up and move, and that beat can't be beat.
That conga is fantastic. It gets under your skin, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You cannot sit. My mother, you know, she doesn't get up and dance, but her toe is tapping when she hears it. So we both enjoy the sound. I never knew it as go-go music. I just knew it was a good sound and always enjoyed it.
Chris, we are glad we've got you moving today, and we're glad you shared that with us. Karen's writing into us here on online saying, go-go was a way of life. From the lunchrooms at school to the neighborhood basketball courts, go-go was everywhere. She writes, I remember pulling into gas stations in Washington, D.C. with go-go playing on my radio, turning the whole gas station into a party. The sound keeps changing. Here's a little bit. This is Backyard Band. Keep It Gangsta, 2002, D.C.'s Backyard Band. Robbie in Virginia Beach, Virginia, is on the line. Hi, Robbie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I was curious where the name Go-Go came from and if there was a particular story behind that.
Great. We'll pick it up. Yeah, Natalie, what about it? I mean, a lot of Americans know, you know, new go-go boots, go-go dancing, go-go clubs, but that sounds like a different thing. What about the name?
No, it came from, well, Chuck Brown, one of the things he said is that it was called that because the music just goes and goes. There also was a song by Smokey Robinson, Going to a Go-Go, that also was taken. So those are the two origins of the term.
Got it. So you really, it wasn't Nancy Sinatra in her go-go boots.
Not at all.
That's a different thread here.
Different go-go.
Got it. Another call from Buffalo, New York. Jim, you're on the air, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. Good conversation. I'm glad to be in the mix. I wanted to make a point about that you mentioned earlier about the song that mentioned the drugs in it. And my point is this, is that remember when the Go-Go piece was coming on, the drug culture had just began in the late 60s, going into the 70s, and as people, the whole world was on a pivot point about drugs. Everybody was learning, was beginning to learn how deadly they are. And so as the Go-Go movement came along, you still had some remnants of people talking about getting high because the education was going on. It was you had us military guys coming back from being exposed to all kinds of drugs.
Sure.
You had it all on the street. So I'm just saying, when you raised that concern, raised that question to the young lady about some of the music, yes, the music had not made the full pivot point. The fun in the music of Go-Go, I remember you dance with a girl. If you didn't know the proper kind of dance, she wouldn't dance with you. I mean, that's with every kind of type of music. But it was still part of the world pivoting. The soul of the city, as Stevie Wonder would talk about the key of life, in the music, it was so powerful. I mean, everybody was into it. And then with the remnants of the free love that had just ended years before it, I mean, I won't say like it was a lot of years. I'm just saying that evolution, it was a changing of the guard, moving away from heavy, really making drugs socialized, even though it is in too many ways, but moving into the artisserie on the dance floor and the fun and the spirit, and it's really funky and good.
I love it, Jim, and you're great at putting it. I want to pick up a couple of threads there, Natalie, with you. I mean, Jim here is the soul of the city. Here's the key of life to get Stevie Wonder in there. Mm-hmm. Sees it in that, a kind of turn away from the drug culture, something that's healthier and more open here. On the other hand, Go-Go went straight into a time when drugs got more dangerous as well, crack and all the rest. Sometimes were even identified with drug dealers who were getting some of those shout-outs from the stage. So what about, on the one hand, the key of life, and the other hand, that darker, that more difficult track, Natalie?
Well, and that's why I look at Go-Go is in itself social history, and it's also journalism. Whatever's happening in the community, it's happening in the Go-Go, it's happening on lyrics, on stage, it's not sanitized. So if there are certain major figures that are emerging, and so you can trace the sort of the history of all of that pivot point that he put that really well, you can trace that happening through the music. And so, you know, it's not to say that this was positive or this is what it should have been or any of that. It's just what it was. It's just honest.
Tina writes to us online. She says, compare some of these songs, you know, with a song NPR reported on just an hour ago, she says, a song by Taylor Swift. Now, Tina's not a Taylor Swift fan, it turns out. She says, that Swift piece isn't even music, it's manufacture. Can't people hear the difference, she writes to us. Why is pop music today so popular? She longs for the musicality, the beat, maybe the funk of some of this Go-Go, and it certainly doesn't have that assembly line feeling that you can hear in a lot of popular music today. I don't want to diss Taylor Swift. It's all over the pop music charts today. What kept that more original sound driving in Go-Go, Natalie?
Well, I think Nico put it really well, as usual. It's what the people wanted. You know, and you know, the pocket is a term in Go-Go, and, you know, so I use that term. It stayed in the pocket in D.C. very conscientiously. That's what the people want. And if, you know, and the thing about Go-Go is they could play Taylor Swift. And in fact, Rare Essence had a wonderful hit by Ashley Simpson. They remade Pieces of Me by Ashley Simpson. Under her, it was sort of like saccharine. And they just funked it all the way down, you know, and made it into something that was huge in the D.C. area, and that's what they do. That's part of what the Go-Go culture is, sort of re-injecting the soul back into music.
There's a freedom there. Ron in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ron, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I just want to make a quick comment about my experience with Go-Go. I lived in D.C. from maybe about 98 to maybe about 2004.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I must say, when I first got to D.C., I didn't know what it was. And I was like, oh, man, this stuff ain't, man, what is this, man, what is this? But then, like I was saying, God said, you know, I went to the cabaret and I seen how people were getting into it. I was like, whoa, what is this, right? And then I said, you know, what made me start liking it is when I would hear the songs, I might not know what it was, but I got like this physical, like this chill, like these butterflies in my stomach when I hear the music. So I was just saying, like, it's a lot of, it's got to be a lot of soul, and it's a lot of experience and a lot of, you know, trials and tribulations, or, you know, the stuff that the people DC went through. I think it shows through that music, man, because I swear, man, I used to talk about it, man, with my buddies, but then after a while I started liking it, man, because every time I heard it, man, I just got these chills, like, whoa, like, man, what is, you know.
Some reality of Washington right there, and it sounds like it moved you, Ron. I really appreciate you bringing that back for us. If I may, let me get one more with Natalie here, Charles in Baltimore, Maryland. Charles, you're on the air. What do you think of those Washington folks and their go-go?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I'm actually from Baltimore, but I'm actually calling you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Great.
When we from Baltimore, we didn't have a genre of go-go. Ours was house and club music.
Yeah.
And we would go to the suburbs in PG County, sometimes in Baltimore County and Howard County, and there would be go-go's. They weren't called discos. They were called go-go's.
Okay.
It was a different experience. It was a totally different environment. What you did was, like the previous caller said, you could tell these people lived the music. It wasn't just listening to something. It wasn't a fad. And as one of the other callers said, or your expert there said,
yeah,
what was written is how people lived. Think about the music and the titles, Sardines, That Funky Meat.
Yeah.
You know, they spoke about topics that they lived. So when you went, you felt it. It wasn't as if you were just going to stand around and socialize. You were going to move, even if you didn't want to move.
Hey, Charles, let me ask you, Charles, why do you think it didn't jump, even from just Washington, Prince George's County to Baltimore? You're so nearby, yet you had different strands. Why has this stayed in the pocket? What makes this so Washington, D.C. to you, Charles?
Like I told you, call taker, I don't believe the people of Washington wanted it to go nationwide, because then they can't claim it, they can't own it, then they can't control it. And the reason it is so pure still to this day is because you have a limited group of people who can perform go-go and who can claim it. And I think that's what makes it so awesome. Now, it could have been commercialized and gone worldwide, I think, had it been pushed, but Chuck Brown stayed right home in D.C., and that's where go-go stays.
Sometimes local is beautiful. Charles, thank you very much for that. Baltimore, Charles. One more, Natalie, and I'll come to you. Tammy in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Tammy, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. What do you know?
Well, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. Actually, I moved to the suburbs of PG County with my family when I was quite young. Mm-hmm. But go-go was everything to us. It was everything to us, and as a result, going to those go-go's and listening to this music today, living in South Carolina now, you're really taking me back. I'm really enjoying it.
What was it like to be at a go-go? What was that experience, Timmy?
Oh, wow. Wall-to-wall people, dark, quiet, but the awe of it. I remember the first time I went, just to, you know, living in the city, you didn't get to see orchestras too often. You know, you went to the Kennedy Center, went to class, you did those things.
Mm-hmm.
But to go into a, you know, to a club or a warehouse, and to look on stage and see, I'm talking about a 15-piece band, you know, in some cases. And that was just awe-inspiring. And then to hear those guys, you know, and again, like one of your earlier callers said, you see the same people in the neighborhood. You see the Congo player. You shake his hand and you feel it. And you know, wow, I know what you were doing last night, because you could feel it in his head. It was just a beautiful experience. I loved it. I'm glad you're doing the show.
Tammy, we're glad to do it, and I'm happy for your call. Natalie Hopkinson, what has it meant to go-go music to the chocolate city, which is no longer so chocolate, as Washington has gentrified? You've had more diverse population, white population moving back into the city. What has that meant for the culture around this music, the music itself?
Well, it's meant, and, you know, Nico is, you know, his comments were dead on and to me very much representative of, you know, I call them sort of like the guardians of go-go, the architects of go-go. They don't spend a whole lot of time
crying about the movement. So you've seen the music move over the line, primarily Prince George's County, you know, into sort of moving into the suburbs more and more.
Suburbs with significant black populations, but even so, out of the center city.
Prince George's is like a shadow chocolate city.
Yep.
And so, you know, you see that movement happening. And so in the city itself, really what's, and, you know, I hope that that's one thing that this book does is kind of educate people in the city, and so that they understand when they see, because you'll see go-go all the time. It could be, you know, you might have kids banging on buckets downtown, or you might be, you know, there are still some shows that happen in the city, and people don't recognize, they don't realize that there's a whole culture and a whole history that's around that. And so they're very unaware of it. And, you know, so it's going to, in order for there to remain a presence for go-go, people are going to have to be open their minds and do some work and learning about what the culture that they've stepped into is.
Well, it keeps changing. Here's You Go. This is by TCB, a.k.a. the Bounce Beat Kings. This bounce beat go-go. Now, Natalie, if we still had Nico, the go-goologist, with us, are the old school guys into the new sound, this kind of stronger, louder bounce?
Well, Nico is, I mean, again, he's a businessman. And so the thing about, you know, as well as a historian, and so the thing about the guardians of go-go, they're businessmen. So they're really, go-go is one of the most innovative music forms because it keeps changing. They keep reacting to what the people want. And so bounce beat is like a new, it emerged probably in the last decade or so. So that's new by go-go standards. And there's kind of a debate within the community. Some people believe, of the old school folks, don't believe that it's real go-go because it's less, there are less horns, less melody. It's less, you know, it's sort of more punk, a lot of rototom, but for me, I'm not a native Washingtonian, and I actually started, when I started getting into the scene, I started going to shows like TCB, and that's what captured me, because they had some of the most innovative and energetic, creative audiences that you'll ever see in a live environment.
Well, you're a Washington girl now, joining us today from Oak Bluffs. You've written at real depth here, but the music itself, what's it? You're a fan. What's it do for you? What's it mean to you, Natalie?
For me, it's sort of, you know, I've been a scholar. I did my PhD. Mm-hmm. This was my dissertation. This book was my dissertation. So
yeah.
I've taken it as from a scholarly point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody who went to Howard University, has lived in Washington, D.C., and has sort of seen the evolution of the city, for me, it's just something that's just incredibly important and very soulful and very meaningful. And it's sort of a secret that I wish more people, it weren't so much of a secret. I wish more people could sort of have an appreciation for the culture of the Chocolate City.
The Chocolate City, a pocket, as you remind us, that holds a people, a music that holds a people, definitely holds a groove. Natalie Hopkinson's new book is Go-Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of a Chocolate City. Natalie, thank you so much for bringing us this music and being with us today.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Here's Welcome to DC by Mambo Sauce. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.